If you're a long form player and you're looking to get some new tools to help you create entertaining and hilarious long form shows, well, that's what the Art of Slow Comedy Advanced Ensemble class is all about. We'll teach you how to use the suggestion that you get from the audience that works for you, the importance of bringing different energies and different styles into a long-form show so it holds together as an entire piece, and how you can do walk-ons that don't hijack the scene but support your fellow players. I'm really excited because I'll be offering the Art of Slow Comedy Level 3 Advanced Ensemble in two sessions this May. The first one will be on Wednesday, May 26th. That's when it starts, and it will be offered from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. The second one will be starting Friday, May 28th, in the morning from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. I limit this to 10 people max. Now, if you've never worked with me before, you're going to have to get my approval. So if you've got some experience, all you have to do is email me, and all that information will be at my website, which is jimmycorain.com. That's jimmycorain.com. Now, if you sign up before May 12th, the class is only $259. After that, the price goes up to $289. So get in on the early bird discount now. Go to my website, jimmycorain.com, for more information and to register. That's jimmycorain.com.
Jimmy Corain's a nerd. Jimmy Corain's an improv nerd. Jimmy Corain's a nerd.
Oh, hey everybody, this is Jimmy Corain, and you're listening to episode 274 of Improv Nerd, and I'm the host. Our guest today is Eric Acuna. Eric is a improviser, teacher, and his day job is he's a lawyer. He started improvising in Peru about 10 years ago before moving to Washington, D.C., where he studied and is performing at the WIT, Washington Improv Theater. He also took classes at the UCB, and he teaches for Will Hines's World's Greatest Improv School. We talked to Eric about how he found his voice in improv, and he shares with us, two exercises that he uses in his classes. Also, what it was like for him to come from Peru speaking Spanish and having to learn to improvise in English. And we also talk about what happens when somebody might reinforce a stereotype as they're improvising, and the importance of having that dialogue afterwards with the person. So before we get to that episode, I just want to say I turned 57 years old on May 5th, and we had a little party for me in the backyard, and some people were wearing masks. Lauren and I and Betsy were still wearing masks because Betsy's not vaccinated, and because she's 5 years old, and I've been only half vaccinated, and so is Lauren. And it was just really fun to be with like 12 people and just hang out. And because I totally forgot about what it's like, what it feels like when you're just hanging out with people. I've missed it. You know, that's the biggest crowd we've had gathered in a long time. So it was fun. It was really fun. And I'm really grateful. I have a bunch of great friends and got a lot of great gifts. And I'm very grateful. So enough about me. You're going to love this episode. Here it is, the Eric Acuna episode. Enjoy.
Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd, oh yeah. Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd.
Eric Acuna, thank you for being our guest on Improv Nerd.
Thank you for having me, Jimmy.
Eric, you grew up in Lima, Peru, and at the time you're in your 20s and you're studying to be a lawyer, and you go and you see a short form improv show in Lima, Peru. What did you love about it?
When I went there for the first time, I didn't even know it was short form. I didn't know the difference between short form, long form. I got a friend that told me this is an improv show, which means like we're just going to make up stories. And that's at that point, this is like 15 years ago, what people would define, that's why people in Peru would define improv, you made up stories. So I was like, oh, okay, interesting. I will go and check it out. And I never seen anything like that. I just love how fast, how smart, how funny it was. Very different from the local humor that I was used to watch in the Peruvian TV channels. That's why I love American sitcoms. I grew up watching American sitcoms. So it just like completely drawn to me. And I was laughing so much, and I definitely had a theater background, and I really just wanted to try it.
And, you know, when we think of Peruvian art, we think of kind of avant-garde. How is it different than improv in the States?
The first thing that I noticed was that, like I said, like I think the definition of improv, like we are here to made up stories. And I thought like that's really interesting. And there was more of a narrative approach to the improv that I was taking. There was only one improv school in the whole city. This is the capital city of Peru. There are like 10 million people, only like one improv school back then. And there was like 5 levels. And all the levels were very much the same. They didn't have like a specific title of each class, like unlike the States, right? It was just almost like a conservatory where you're just with the same people doing stuff every week for 2 months or 3 months. And then you are done with a level and then you move to the next level, but you're just continuing doing the exact same thing, which is we are here to tell stories. Here are some games for short form. This is how you learn. This is how you react. These are the characters that you can play. So it was definitely different when I moved to the States and I start taking classes here. Very, very different from like the experience that I had in Peru.
So so you do move to the States because you get this great job in Washington. You end up in Washington, D.C. and you start at the Washington Improv Theater. And I'm really curious because your language is Spanish. How is it for someone who's is not native English speaking to start improvising in English?
It's very hard. It was very hard. Yeah, I did improv in Peru for a couple of years, of course, in Spanish. I never, ever thought I could do improv in English. I never studied English until I was maybe 17, 18 years old. And it was very hard when I moved here. I got a cool job opportunity here in DC, not related to comedy, but with my law degree and human rights issues. And when I started doing it, I was very self-conscious. I didn't know if I was gonna be able to come up with words. My vocabulary, even now, it's still reduced. It's not as broad as other people, of course. So I was like, I don't think I'm going to be able to do this. I don't have the skills. I'm already playing in a different level as every single other of my classmates when I start taking classes. But that those concerns disappear almost immediately from like my first class. Just how people were being supportive and there was no judgment whatsoever. And I think also the DC community is different to other, the DC improv community is different from other communities that I've met, like New York or Chicago or LA, because in DC, most of the people, not all, but most of them, they are not thinking, I wanna become a famous comedian, a famous improviser. These people have incredible jobs in DC, and this is a hobby. They love it. They spent a lot of hours, a lot of time, a lot of money, but this is a cool hobby that they have. And so there was no like this harsh competition to trying to push me over so that they can get to the top. So I just feel extremely welcome, and people were extremely, extremely nice when I started doing improv in English.
And how much was Seinfeld of the television show? How much did that help you learn English?
Seinfeld was one of the main reasons why I love comedy and why I learn English and just why I wanted to be involved in comedy in some way. Like I was telling you, back in Peru, there weren't that many comedy shows. So we had cable, and this is when I was, I guess, 13, 14 years old. And I would watch a lot of sitcoms on cable, American sitcoms. For me, the one that was changed everything was Seinfeld. I started watching it, and I've never watched a sitcom or even any TV show where I was just laughing every 20 seconds, every 30 seconds. And I was like, what is this? I've never experienced anything like this before. The laugh tracks and the characters and how wacky in a way they were, and how every episode would make sense within their world. It was just a big inspiration. I would record it on my VCR, and I would rewatch it. I will watch it in English with Spanish subtitles, of course, because otherwise I would have not understand anything. And I would just rewatch it, and I would have a notebook, and I would start writing phrases or quotes, or just like, oh, this is a scene one. They are at the restaurant. A scene two. Oh, they are at Jerry's apartment. In a way, just like kind of dissecting how it was. I was just so intrigued by it. And I was like, oh, they're coming back to the same location. So interesting. I had no idea this could be like a Harold-ish format back then, but it was so cool.
And then, so you've taken classes at WIT there, and you're auditioning for Harold teams. You're not getting on them. So you decide that you're going to, and this is big because it's like a 5 hour, isn't it? 5 hours to go from Washington to New York.
Yeah, it's just four and a half hours.
So you decide that you're going to stay in Washington, but you're going to commute to the UCB to take classes. I mean, it's 4.5 hours there, 4.5 hours back. You're laughing. It seem funny now?
it seems funny now. And it was funny back then as well. When I was taking the curriculum at WIT and I was falling in love with long form improv, I used to go to New York a lot just to watch shows. I've heard about UCB and I read the manual, and I was trying to go a lot during the weekends, of course, just to see shows. And I was amazed by how it was and by the community and the audience that is different from the feelings in DC. So I decided I want to take classes here. I think this is going to be insane, but I'm going to do it. I talked to my boss. And I said, you know what? Every Thursday, I'm going to be working from home. I never said I was going to New York.
Don't worry, he won't be. I'm sure he's not going to be.
Yeah. And I would wake up at 5:30 in the morning, go to the Union Station, take the Amtrak, go to New York, get there, and then walk to take classes. And then at noon or 1 p.m., or maybe 2 p.m., I would probably have lunch with my classmates, talk about improv, and then come back. Sometimes if I was feeling it, I would stay at night and see shows and then try to come back at midnight. And then Friday morning, I would have to be at the office at 9 a.m. And I did that for a whole year.
Now, where do you get that dedication? Is it come from your parents or is it something that you developed?
I think it's both. I think my parents have always taught me to work hard to continue to pursue my dreams. And they also really like that, you know, I have a steady job in DC, and they know that a steady job isn't just my whole life. I have other dimensions of my life, and comedy is a big, big one of them. And yeah, I've always been a person that when I want something, I want to achieve it. So when I start taking level one, I said at UCB, I said, well, maybe it's going to be 2 months. And once I'm done, I loved it. And I said, I'm going to do the next one. and I'm going to do the next one. And sometimes I've learned just to jump in and go for it instead of asking too much or judge myself about, are you sure you're going to do this? Are you sure? Maybe that's not a good idea. Sometimes I try to like not listen to those voices and just like go for it and see how things go.
But those voices come up and you just shut them off?
I'm gonna shut them off.
I don't have that button. I don't have that. Mine just play in stereo. You said something that I found so interesting is you found your voice when you started to take classes at UCB. Can you explain that?
Yeah. So when I was taking classes at UCB and I started seeing a lot of shows, DC, we don't have in DC, there's no an improv theater that has shows every single day. There's the weekend shows and it's mostly, long form, just teams doing a format and whatnot. There's not that many like character shows or sketch shows back then. This is like 8-9 years ago. But when I would go to UCB, I would see a lot of not only good improv, but sketches, one person shows, characters. And I would be amazed of that. Again, like that's something that I've never experienced, that I never seen before. And I really enjoy just seeing different people with different backgrounds, people of color, just like doing their own thing, creating this incredible comedic stuff based on their experiences. And I was like, I've been trying to push away my background, like I'm Peruvian, I'm Latino, I speak Spanish. And I've been kind of like during DC time, my first years doing improv here in DC, I kind of pushed that away, put that on the side because I wanted to fit in. I wanted to kind of like do what everyone else is doing. And back then it was like mostly white people. And that just helped me a lot to remember who am I, where am I coming from, and that I shouldn't hide all of those stuff, but I should just embrace that. That's what makes me. So it just helped me to start finding my own comedic voice and like doing that in improv and then in sketch or characters. It was honestly like a gigantic breakthrough for me.
And then it has such an impact on you when you start teaching improv. You're like, okay, this is something that I want to teach my students, right? And what is it? How, I mean, because we throw that around in improv a lot. I know I do. It's like, it's great for finding your voice. What are specific exercises that you teach so someone can find their voice?
Yeah, I feel like in order to find your voice, you have to be comfortable owning who you are, whatever you want to share, of course, like you, whatever you are feeling comfortable sharing about yourself, try to put it on a stage. So very simple, like one of the very simple exercise that I do is that, okay, we're just going to start a scenes and I want you to start on a scene of a place that you are extremely familiar with. It's a place that maybe that you know from your childhood, a place that that you know as a teenager that made an impact on you, that like, you know really, really well. And sometimes that people have maybe never ever done a scene in those locations, even though they know it so well, they've never done it, because we tend to use the same three or four locations. Like we'll go to a generic office, a generic high school, a generic restaurant. And that has been like really interesting. People bring in a location that they know, like, that they feel comfortable about. So for beginners, that already puts them at ease. It's like, okay, I know this, cevicheria, for instance, for me, like this place where I eat ceviche, this restaurant that I really enjoy. This feels at home. I feel at home. Let's bring the other, my scene partner in this scene, in this environment that I own, that I'm comfortable with.
Now, are they doing scene painting before that in terms of that environment? How does the other person know that they're doing that environment?
So just for the first time we do it, I actually go in and ask every person just to describe it really quickly before we jump into the scene. Just like three or four bullet points of this location. But yeah, when jump in the scene.
So if it was me, I'd say, okay, I'm in my childhood bedroom. There was a bed, and then there was windows all around it. It had wood paneling, and I had an 8-track player with Billy Joel's "The Stranger" on it. And it was one of these things. It almost looked like you were. It was blue, and it was Panasonic, and you push it down like it was like it looked like you were pushing dynamite in a cartoon. But the handle was broken, and my brother had the room in front of me. So that's my description.
Mm-hmm. So
if I'm a student in your class.
Yeah, that sounds great. Great description. A lot of interesting things about that. Great. So you're just gonna set up the scene. We're gonna start a scene, right? A two-person scene. And you're just going to, I mean, we're gonna use one of those things that we're gonna pretend that we are in that bedroom, that we are right there. So you're just going to start the scene by either describing one of the things that you enjoy or just by telling me how much you like blank or the view that you set from the window or the music. And I'm pretty much like someone that is just reacting to that. I'm not trying to add like, oh yeah, and also there is this poster of whatever. I'm just like reacting at first just to like see what emotions that that place comes from you. Like, why is this person bringing this scene? Are you excited to be here? Are you sad? Are you like playing a child back then? Or are you playing like a grown-up man that came back to this childhood home? And we just like can find that this interaction between these two characters.
So do I start, so I pick a character. So that will inspire me to decide if I'm going to play an adult or if I'm going to play a child. But are we going to start this like a scene, or am I describing something? Is that the
just
beginning?
We'll start like a scene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then you would just say, for instance, a line as like, "Oh my God, I love you know." Every time that I listen to this Billy Joel song, it just reminds me about that you can try anything in this world, whatever it is. And then the other person will.
Okay, so let's do it. I'll use your line, and let's just improvise for just a couple seconds here. Oh my God, I love this Billy Joel album.
This is pretty good. I'm not into Billy Joel, but I've seen that you're a gigantic fan.
Yeah, I've got The Stranger here, and I also have 52nd Street. I mean, yeah, you got to hear this stuff.
Is this the reason why you brought me to your?
Yeah, home. Yeah, you don't think I'm strange for it, do you?
No, not at all.
Cool, because I didn't bring it up at school at all, you know?
Yeah, you don't seem a person that is very into music. You're extremely, very shy and very into like science, which I think it's really, really cool. I mean, we're science partners.
Yeah.
So I thought we were going to be doing some of our homework, but hey, this is cool. I like music as well.
Yeah, I got some other CDs.
Yeah.
What? Yeah. I
mean, are you like a music aficionado?
A little, yeah.
But don't tell anybody.
Don't tell anybody at school, okay? Because they're like into like Rolling Stones and REM and all that like cool stuff.
Oh, I love those bands. I'm a huge rock and roll person. Yeah. So I don't know too much about Billy Joel or.
I'm more of a singer songwriter.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never had the chance to experience that. Like, why do you like that? Songwriters so much?
Well, because they're like telling a story about themselves and they're revealing something about themselves. They're expressing themselves. Yeah.
That's just like you, like in school.
Yeah. All right. Scene. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And it's just like, it's something that you can always go. Like, you know Billy Joel, and then probably maybe we'll talk about other type of music that you're very aware. Mm-hmm. And just kind of like inform you. And you're in a way bringing some parts of you, like some real parts of you. And even though you're playing a character, there are parts that are like very true and honest to yourself. And I think that's just like a first step in order to be comfortable about who you are. And start to finding like, oh, this is fun. I love talking about this music. I think I find that this can be a comedic stuff for me. a comedic angle for me. I like it. You start getting it.
I think what you bring up in this game that I think is really important is I think, and certainly I could do more of it as a performer. And that is, I think sometimes I'm embarrassed about things that I like, yes, or things that I'm good at. I'm like, oh, if I share this, people are going to judge me.
Yes. And 100%. And also, if I share this, people are going to see, oh, what a know-it-all, right? Like, oh, this person is just trying to show off how much they know about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. But there are ways to bring it without sounding that way that are more like true, not just like, hey, let me just talk to you about Buffy the Vampire Slayer just to share it with you, but more in a genuine genuine way. I teach a workshop at the World Greatest Improv School with Will Hines, and there's been some people with 15, 20 years of experience that have taken that workshop, which was pretty cool. And I've done this exercise with them. And I asked them, have you ever done, like in your 20 years of experience, have you ever done a scene in this location that you just mentioned? And they were like, never. And I was like, that's so interesting. Like, if you know it so well, and I asked why you haven't done it. And they are like, I haven't even thought about it. Like, it's just like, it's almost like, oh, I entered into improv world and I tried to close those doors of knowledge of my experience, my personality a little bit to be more open to whatever I am. And I don't think you should completely close the other doors. Just like you can leave them a little bit open, right? And then if you need some information from there, just bring it. It's really, really interesting to see that.
So if you tap into that, is there other things that they can go further to tap? Because what you're talking about is tapping into their life experience and being okay with sharing it.
Exactly. Yeah. Being okay with sharing it and being smart about sharing it. Another exercise that I really enjoy is just using an expertise that you know, like something that you are very passionate about. And it can be anything. It can be literally anything. I've done exercises where people are, I'm an expert in the wrestling world, or I'm an expert at the Ireland political movement back in the 80s. Great. Like there's no, it can be any range of topics. Great. How can we incorporate those topics that you are passionate about, that you want to speak about into a scene? And just a very simple way, because it can be tricky. Just a very simple way is like, great. So let's go with the trickiest one, like this Irish political situation. Where would be a place where like you would never bring that up? Like where is a place that has no place to bring that up? Like an unusual location that you would bring that up. So that's why I start. This is at the top of the exercise before they start the scene. And they will think about like, oh, what if I'm trying to buy, I'm buying a surfboard in LA. Great, that has nothing to do. I don't see any connection from there.
So would I be the guy who's selling the surfboard and you come in with the information, or do we both have two different points of view? Like passion.
Just one person. So the other person is just like an open slate to whatever the other person is doing and reacting to it.
Great. So yeah. Let's do a little, you'll be the Irish. That's sure. What you,
I will go with. I will go with more of my, yes. My one. Yeah.
Because that's mine. What did you say? Irish.
The Irish political conflict back in the 80s, IRA and all of that stuff.
Okay. Mine ended at 74. So, 74. Okay, great.
I will with my context, which is like, the Peruvian War that happened between the 1980 and 2000.
And I'm selling you a,
you're selling me a surfboard.
A surfboard. Okay, yeah. Great. Yeah.
Hey, so, you have a question?
No. Yeah. It sounded like you had a question about this board right here.
Oh yeah, you work here. Oh, sorry, I didn't notice you work here. Yeah, thanks. This is a cool shop. Thanks. I'm just new to LA.
Yeah.
I move all the way from Peru, and I just wanna, I feel like that's what you do in LA. You have to. You can have to learn how to surf. So I don't know if you can help me find a surfboard for a beginner like me.
Well, we've got one right here that's great. It's our beginning surfboard.
Okay.
It's called starter board. It's very easy. There's actually on it, there's some where you put your feet. It's drawn on there, as you can see that.
Okay. Yeah. No, I see it. Okay. That sounds cool. Question. Does it bright at dark when there, you know, like when there is, when the electricity goes out, will it be bright?
Yeah. There's, you see around the edges, there's glow tape.
Okay.
Great. When it goes out, you can see the outline of the surfboard.
You know, you cannot, when I was in Peru, like, during the war, there was a lot of electricity shutdown. So you always need to have like something bright to like know where you are at. So I mean, you can never be too careful. Maybe
are you looking for something that might be bulletproof? I do have a couple models. If that's not a concern.
You know what? I would love that. I would love even like bigger, because people used to use the terrorists used to use car bombs. So that shit is wild.
Okay, so I have let me. This is our military line. Wow. It's a little more expensive than what I showed you. If budget is not a concern of yours, it seems like safety is more of a priority.
Oh, safety number one. Yeah.
So this board is bulletproof. It also has an option, which if you'd like, I could show you that. It has a shield that shields from. Any sort of sharks primarily, but any sort of like submarine attacks or anything that might be coming from you in the water.
Unbelievable. This is, I mean, honestly, when I came here, I didn't know you were going to have this incredible range of surfboards, but this is exactly what I want. You know, like you can never be too careful. Back in Peru, you're walking down a street, car bomb, boom, exploding. You didn't see it coming. And I'm going to be in the ocean a lot here. So if there's a car bomb, I want to be protected. I want to be ready to, you know, like just have a good time.
I have to look at the manual because this is more for the water, but I would imagine the explosives are the same in terms of, and I'm sure it would protect you if a car bomb did affect you in the water like that.
Okay. That sounds good. Question. Does it have any area where I can put, you know, like some food?
Rations? Yes.
Yeah, like some rations would be great. Because, you know, when there's these explosions back in Peru, like people, all the bodegas, the stores are closed. So like you always need to have a little bit of cans of beans or rice or...
Take a look down here. I'm just going to open this up. Take a look down here.
All right.
See, there's water in a can. There's beans in a can. There's rice in a can. And there's pineapple in a can. It's all there. And there's meat in a can too. Scene. All right, great. How did we do in that exercise? That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was really fun. It went great. Like you are just, you know, trying to agree with my demands. It is this incredible surf shop that has all of this stuff. And I'm just like dropping, this is who I am. Like this is all of that I've said is true. Like I was scared of walking down the street because there could be a car bomb. Mm-hmm. Like school got canceled because there was a car bomb two blocks away. So that is true. I'm also afraid of tear gas because there were so many protests and the police would, you know, like throw tear gas at people. And I would have to grab like a t-shirt and put it in vinegar and just cover my face. So all of that stuff is real and just put it into, and I feel comfortable enough to talk about it, and put it into this like improv comedy scene. And it feels really nice. I feel like very empowered by using my own knowledge and my own stuff, and seeing you just like owning it. Cause like I think that was great that you're like, yes, I'm going to do that. But maybe another improviser could have been like, I'm sorry. Are you insane? What do you mean? Like glow in the dark, like for car bombs. This is LA, right? Like there could be someone that is maybe like not as empathetic or not even empathetic. That was not the word. Just like choose differently and be like, I'm sorry, we don't have that. You're out of your mind. And that will still keep me being like, okay, well, you haven't seen anything here. And I'm going to keep pushing. I'm going to keep pushing my point of view.
Both ways work. I mean, you know, in terms of this exercise.
Yeah, and it can be, I mean, if you're doing it for the first time, maybe, and if it's a topic that you may be like iffy about it, it can be a little bit hard. It's like, oh no, should I bring this up? Like, shouldn't, but the more comfortable you feel about the expertise or the area of interest that you're bringing, the more you can defend yourself and keep your ground and be like, yeah, you throw me everything. You just keep denying and I'm going to be still empathetic. Like, I don't hate you. I don't, you know, like you're not getting into like a conflict, useless scene, but this is like, this is great. Keep bringing this stuff. I'm on board with whatever you're doing.
So we were improvising and I said the rations, there's rice and beans. And immediately I'm thinking to myself, is that, you know, I'm feeling self-conscious. I'm feeling shame that I made a bad choice and it's a very stereotypical choice. Can you tell me how you reacted to it?
Yeah, I love it because it's, at least in my case, it's 100% true. It's like, I love rice and beans. So hell yeah, give me rice and beans.
But do you see where that line can be? And that was, like, and maybe if I was improvising with somebody else, my subconscious would have gone to other items in there.
Yeah, exactly. Like if I tell you, like if I'm Italian, you probably say, oh yeah, like you can put your pasta, or you know, like trying to go to like this, either stereotypes or certain knowledge that we have about a certain group of people.
Right. But mine was unconscious.
Exactly.
But I'm still feeling some shame about it. So where's that line, I guess?
I think it depends on like you trying to be genuine and trying to learn. Like if you feel bad, I think like it would be great. Like let's say this actually happening in a show. Mm-hmm. I didn't even track that, that works with me. But I feel like talking about it, like after the show, you come and be like, hey, you know what? I said this. I wanna let, exactly like you just said right now. I think that's a great way to start. And then and maybe the more you do it, because the more you play with people that are maybe bringing those, their own like perspectives or like people of color, you start now, probably this time you didn't think about it, but maybe the next time you're going to be like, oh, wait, I did it this time. I remember the rice and beans situation. Now I'm going to be a little bit more mindful to that scenario. So like the more you do it and the more you experience those scenes with other type of people backgrounds, you can start acknowledging like, oh shit, yeah, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to switch to that. Or maybe this is not the right thing. So I'm just going to, you know, not say it. So yeah, it's just,
well, I think this is really good. This I like that because now we have like boundaries. Like you might say, okay, that time it didn't bother me, but you said this in the last show, and that bothered me, and we can have this dialogue because I think these conversations are really hard to do. And why do you think that is?
I think they are hard because at least in America. What I've noticed is, yeah, like the improv, it's been so captured by white people or that when there are new people of color coming in and doing scenes, then it just feels like, I mean, there people are welcome, but it definitely feels like, oh, I don't know exactly what to do, what to say now that, you know, like this whole, world is changing and people are being more aware and all this racial situation that is happening right now, people are trying to be more aware, but they are like scared to talk about it. And it's like, I don't know if I should bring it up. I don't want to be an asshole or just encapsulating like, hey, I'm sorry, I'm talking to you, my Latino friend, right? Or like, I'm talking to you, my Black friend. You're like, we're all human beings. We all have different like three-dimensional characters or personalities. But it's like, I found very successful every encounter that I have with improvisers that have told me after shows, hey, or even before shows, hey, I just want to double check, like if I'm doing this or that, what are your thoughts? Because like some people don't know, like they maybe also like that represents a lot of like in my real life, I don't have that many friends that are Latinos or that are Black or Asian. So this is a great way of sharing those moments and talking about it. And trying not to feel like that voice in your head is like, don't approach and don't talk about that. Just like kind of like shutting it down a little bit and just like be as open as you can, trying to talk with people about it.
It sounds scary, but
It
I think
is.
it's something necessary because
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's for me, you know, as a white male, like I don't know your experience. I don't know the black experience, you know. So I need to I need to learn and I need to learn quick, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. And I think learning is very important. Listening is very important. Like probably like, yeah, I would feel like weird if like someone starts to see at a taqueria with me and trying to, hey, your sombrero, right? Like I was like, this is odd. But if I started it, like if I am like comfortable doing it, then yeah, I'm bringing you on board. I'm telling you like, this is fine. You can be part of it and we can have a good time. This is just a reality. So it's that sense of like, it's a lot of learning. It's a lot of learning to do. And when you can step in and when you have to just like wait for someone else to initiate something that you may think, oh, this may not be good. If you have doubts, maybe then it's not the right time and don't do it. And maybe you can ask afterwards.
Do you, still in Washington, D.C. and still associated with the WIT, you were part of a committee to, make improv more inclusive. So for people that are listening, what kind of things did you guys do to make people feel more inclusive in the improv community there in Washington?
So one of the first things that we did was listening to people. Like one of the first things that we needed is that we need to listen to people. There's so many people involved in the community that is either performing or as a student. And they maybe haven't been able to express their thoughts and what are they thinking. So that was one of the first things that we did, start reaching out to people and start opening up like forums and meetings just to listen to people, hear their concerns, hear their thoughts, what they can improve, what they cannot. Because even though I was part of this small committee, we are all, again, we're all different. We all have our own thoughts. And it was great to just like compile everyone's ideas. And yeah, there's been like a bunch of measures. There's been I think the theater has been more, or the community has been more proactive in order of casting decisions, casting more POC improvisers, giving more space on stage to POC improvisers, having more teachers that are POC, just like creating these spaces for POCs to thrive and to explore and to put shows out there. Like we've had unbelievable, like, well, in the past year, well, before the pandemic, like among the most successful shows have been one director produced by POCs improvisers, because we haven't seen any of that. So it was like really new and really interesting, and they were extremely successful. And I think that's the direction that we want to bring. Like we want to give the voice and give the space to all these people that maybe haven't seen represented on a stage. Like I did when I started doing improv here, I didn't see myself represented a lot. And now I'm working really hard trying to change that.
All right. So we got to wrap this up. This has been so much fun. And I want to thank Will Hines for connecting us because I really appreciate that. We always end the podcast the same way. What one piece of advice would you give an improviser starting out today?
My piece of advice would be embrace who you are. Don't be afraid of showing your personality, your background, your skills, because that makes you unique. That will make your improv completely different to anyone else. And that's why you're gonna shine.
Eric Acuna, thank you for being our guest on Improv Nerd. And there you have it, another great episode of Improv Nerd is in the can. I want to thank our guest, Eric Acuna. I also want to thank Will Hines from the World's Greatest Improv School for suggesting Eric as our guest. And as always, I want to thank my producer, Dan Schiffmacher, because he's the one who makes me sound so slick and so professional. If it wasn't for Dan, you wouldn't be hearing my voice right now. Also, if you want to know more about my award-winning improv classes, workshops, and intensives called The Artist Low Comedy, go to my website, please, at jimmycorain.com. Also, follow us on Twitter, improv_nerd. like our Improv Nerd Facebook page because it really helps with my low self-esteem. And if you like this podcast, please, please, please find a place to review it. I think you can do it on Apple or I don't know where you can do it, but just write a nice review because it would really it really helps and it keeps me going because I'm needy for affirmations. I'm really needy. So if you could do it, I would really appreciate it. And thank you for listening. And until next time, remember, walk, don't run.